Hey, welcome to your turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us. We're going to be talking about some really interesting stuff today, very important financially for federal workers and retirees. My first guest is David Snell. He's Director of Retirement Services for the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. David, thank you for being with us.
Good morning, Mike. Good to be here.
You're fresh from a vacation in South Carolina, huh?
Absolutely.
Outstanding. Okay. All right. Well, now it's time to get back to work. Cast aside those things. David, awful lot of people are interested in phased retirement. Among them, our web editor, Mike O'Connell, who's going to be writing up this broadcast. And so I wanted to ask you about that. I noticed that there was a story August 13th in the Baltimore Sun about the phased retirement. What is a phased retirement, and where are we now with it?
Okay. Phased Retirement Act is an idea that OPM came up with. In fact, former director John Barry did, that would allow folks to kind of ease out of retirement, ease out of work and into retirement. The thought behind it is that with a lot of institutional knowledge going out the door from the federal government, that if a phase type of a retirement could be available, these folks who are in the middle of working on a project or whose institutional knowledge is such that it would take time to get a new employee
sort of up
trained
to speed,
on it, up to speed, that they could continue to work and at the same time draw part of their pension. The regulations that the Office of Personnel Management have drawn up allows for 50% part-time work by the employee, and at the same time, they would receive 50% of their retirement. And in that way, these folks could ease out, could pass down their institutional knowledge, still receive enough money to live on, be helping the government in passing on that institutional knowledge.
Well, you know, I've heard from so many people in and out of government that they don't want to retire completely, or they would like to get a taste of it, and the ideal for them would be to work 2 or 3 days a week. Is that how this phased retirement plan would work? Is there a set number of days they would work?
Well, they can't work more than 50% half-time.
Okay.
So it would be a 40-hour pay period.
2020, huh?
Yeah, 2020. And a big portion of that must be used in mentoring another employee, someone presumably who will be taking that senior employee's place when they do finally decide to retire. Now, at this moment, the Office of Personnel Management, they have put the proposed regulations out for comment. They did that in July. The comment period, I believe, was over August 5th. And it will be probably toward the end of the year that OPM, and that's optimal, before OPM releases the final regulations on this. So in the meantime, agencies are kind of waiting, and there is no phased retirement. So I would say that it won't probably be effective until early next year.
Right. Well, in her piece in the Baltimore Sun, Eileen Ambrose wrote that she said almost 75,000 people retired between January and July of this year. So that's an awful lot of people. That's up about 31% from a year ago. And I would think that if you have this phased retirement plan up and running by the end of this year, or certainly the start of 2014, that this retirement tsunami we've been predicting for the last decade plus could actually hit us, because you're going to be able to get credit for sick leave, too, starting in January, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. The first folks will get all their sick leave credited for service. So, this is, we'll see how this goes. I'm hopeful. As you point out, there have been a lot of people asking about it, Once it becomes available, we'll see if how many people actually take advantage of it.
Yeah, I know of several instances in the government where people who have retired have been called back to their agencies to work a couple of days a week on this very kind of thing, this both archiving and mentoring and whatnot.
Right. Yeah, and it works well. I mean, on paper, it sounds great. It stems the tsunami with all the knowledge going out the door, and at the same time, provides a way to ensure that continuation of knowledge and skill.
Okay. Yeah. I know that's a lot of people are looking forward to that. It's one of those things we thought would never happen. And as you said, it's a tribute to John Barry, who's now the new U.S. ambassador to Australia. But he was really down in the weeds with this federal personnel stuff. And this was one of the, I guess this was one of the monuments to him.
Well, I'm sure he's, when he gets to Australia, it'll be a smile on his face to look back and see that this has actually become a reality.
Well, and the worst job of the OPM director, too, no matter what anybody thinks, the worst job is in the winter when you have to make the weather calls in Washington. that's make or break time.
Oh, absolutely.
John Barry got burned a couple of times himself on it.
I don't know of a director that hasn't.
Yeah, that's right. This month's NARF magazine, the cover story is a fascinating one. I read it literally cover to cover. It's called Don't Take the Bait. And it's these pension advance offers that a lot of retirees are getting. And you see the ads on cable TV all the time. But do you have a structured settlement or an annuity? How do these scams work? And I guess most of them are scams.
Well, I wouldn't want to paint that broad brush stroke on everybody that offers these. What it is these companies are offering what they call pension advances. In other words, they'll give you cold, hard cash now in return for part of your pension for the next whatever months to pay it back. The problem here is that there are so many unscrupulous companies that will have a lot of hidden fees that would, especially in the area of interest rates, that you're going to have to pay these so-called advances back, and what they are is really loans. They call them advances to get around certain parts of the law, but they're really, in essence, loans. And older folks, especially after having gone through this last 3 or 4 years of recession, may be desperate in some cases to get their hands on some cash. We know the banks have been reluctant, shall we say, to loosen up their loans and allow these folks to get them. So these predatory type lenders are out there in the waters looking for bait, and they're finding it in the retirees. Retirees often have these defined benefit plans where they know how much they're going to have coming in. They're good targets for these companies. But the hidden costs can drive these folks further into debt in the future. They have, what I've read, they've estimated there's interest rates are from 27 to over 100%. And they're taking advantage, basically, of people's tendency to spend more than they can afford now. At the expense of their future.
Well, I noticed, too, in the article, it said that many of these companies require you to take out a life insurance policy from them. So that's another way they hit you. And also, I wouldn't want a perfect stranger having a $200,000 life insurance policy on me. I'd be looking over my shoulder a lot.
It's a good point. That's another one of those hidden hooks that they have. And of course, once you buy the life insurance policy, I'm sure that there's all kinds of caveats to it that would prevent you from being able to get out of that deal. So, as a matter of fact, I remember there was some complaints from folks in Panama that had gotten into some kind of situation with furniture sellers, furniture retailers, who required those folks to have their annuities direct deposited to accounts that the furniture company had actual control over. And, you know, that's another way these companies are skirting the law, because under the law, federal annuities cannot be assigned. You can't just assign your annuity over to anybody unless there's a court order that directs you to do so. So some of these companies are asking folks to change their direct deposit so the money goes into an account they control, which is even more dangerous.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, you would think folks, you know, gain wisdom when they age. But again, economic stress is such that people do desperate things, and they don't always work out for the best for them.
Yeah, that is absolutely scary. Need to take a short break here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Be right back.
Achieve continuous monitoring through the Security Connected Framework from McAfee. Built on more than two decades of proven security practices, the Security Connected approach helps agencies improve security posture, optimize security for greater cost effectiveness, and align security strategically with mission objectives. Visit futureagency.com to learn more. That's futureagency.com. For each unique visitor to futureagency.com, $1 will be donated to the Wounded Warrior Project.
Don't miss Game Day the Navy Way this fall in Annapolis. Order your 2013 Navy football season tickets today and secure your reserve seat for the Navy versus Air Force game on Saturday, October 5th. Tickets are going fast. Get the best seats now by calling 1-800-US-4-NAVY or by visiting NavySports.com. That's 1-800-US-4-NAVY or NavySports.com to get yours today. Navy football, Game Day, the Navy Way.
When faced with opportunities and challenges, it's important to have a reliable information technology partner on your side. Make a confident choice with GovConnection. Our extensive experience serving the federal marketplace ensures we can identify and apply the right purchasing vehicles to equip your organization with the right tools to accomplish your mission. The IT marketplace is full of companies who claim to be different. Choose GovConnection. Call 800-800-0019. Sponsored by Fluke Networks. Technology, expertise, and reliability that expands capability while reducing cost.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having three number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Garden of Life in Boron.
What do you want to be when you're older?
When I'm older, I want to be a singer. That's my goal.
An organizer of like do-gooders.
I want to be a media mogul.
When I'm older, I want to be anything but the one that doesn't fit in, the one that people don't love.
Everyone deserves a dream.
But some of us are depressed,
anxious,
angry,
scared,
don't feel like ourselves.
If that's you, say something.
Talk to someone. People will listen. Add your voice at okaytotalk.org.
okaytotalk.org. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Life is filled with uncertainty, military life especially. AFMA can help you breathe easy through it all. Since 1879, AFMA has helped military families with low-cost military life insurance and the best survivor assistance. We're experts at helping you manage the complexities of military life and securing your family's financial well-being. Call 1-877-398-2263 today or go to aafmaa.com to see how we can help you.
Each day, over 49 million Americans live in households that experience hunger, including 17 million children. Johnson's Florist and Garden Centers want to help. They're asking gardeners in the Washington area to plant extra this growing season, and at harvest time, bring that extra to one of their stores in D.C., Kensington, and Olney, Maryland. All donations will go to a local organization that feeds the hungry. Visit johnsonsflorist.com to learn more about the Plant a Row for the Hungry initiative. johnsonsflorist.com.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Glad to have you with us. And we're talking with David Snell. He's Director of Retirement Services for the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. Dave, I know in Washington, some of the very best lobbyists, and I say that not just because I know them, but I've worked with all kinds, but some of the very best lobbyists work for and represent federal and postal workers, retirees, managers, and whatnot. It's an extremely tight, tough cadre of people, and they can take anything you throw at them, just about. But the one thing you can strike fear into their hearts is if you use the term chained CPI, for chained consumer price index. And I know that's a top legislative priority of NARF. Could you tell us why people should be nervous about this?
Yes, I can, and I'm glad you brought it up, Mike. People are voicing a lot of concern about affordable care and the FEHB reform and that sort of thing. But the one thing on the horizon for retirees that will affect them, and that is the proposal in Congress to change the way the cost of living is calculated from a CPI urban wage earner formula to a chain CPI. And this is going to affect current employees when they retire. It's going to affect current retirees. It's going to affect survivors of those retirees because those survivors will also see a loss in the amount of inflationary protection that will be offered if the CPI, the chain CPI, is enacted.
Right. Excuse me. This consumer price index, too, just to identify it. This is the thing that triggers cost of living adjustments for not only federal retirees and military retirees, but a lot of veterans' benefits, and most importantly, the huge number of people who get Social Security benefits.
It would,
as I understand it, it would shave future increases each year by about 0.3%. Is that right?
Yeah. That's right, about 0.3%, and which doesn't sound like a whole bunch, but if you understand the fact that people are going to be retired for almost as long as they have worked, and that over a period of 20, 25 years, that 0.3% is going to equate into tens of thousands of dollars for the retiree, then you understand the importance that a chain CPI not be enacted into law.
Yeah, it's compounding in reverse, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And we are urging everybody, all retirees, but especially NARF members, to contact their congressman the week of September 16th. That's our Contact Congress week. And voice their adamant refusal to have the chain CPI take away their future benefits.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Obama administration has endorsed this, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
Okay, I mean that to me is critical because if it was only a proposal of House Republicans, which many of these are, you'd say, well, we're going to continue with the stalemate. But this was part of the Simpson-Bowles Commission recommendations, which also included the two-year, which then stretched to three-year federal pay freeze.
Right.
So this is a sleeper out there, but it's got the White House backing and considerable congressional backing. And I would think from a politician's point of view, this is a dream come true because it will save a tremendous amount of money But it's the kind of thing that it's very hard for people to understand. And once it's implemented, as you said, people will barely notice it. I mean, you really won't notice it because you get what you get. And so it's from a politician standpoint, this is a dream come true.
Oh, sure. It's not going to hit anybody in the face right away.
Yeah.
And people will shrug and say, okay, well, you know, 0.03. But over a period of time, and as I said, you know, for federal retirees who elect survivor benefits, those survivor benefits are also subject to these cost of living increases. And so if something happens to them, their survivors are also going to see a less of a yearly increase than they would normally under the current CPI. So, it has a lot of effect over a period of years, and it's no way to secure your future in retirement.
David, have you been, I know you worked at OPM for many years in retirement, have you been tracking this plan in the president's budget that would set up a self plus one option within the federal employee health program? In other words, now you can either get single coverage or family. It doesn't matter if your family is only two people. It's single or family. And they propose setting up a self plus one, meaning those two people would pay a different premium than people who have a family of three or four or five.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, NARF is part of the FEHB Reform Advisory Committee
okay.
that OPM has set up. It constitutes not only organizations like NARF, but a lot of unions. So we have met with OPM on their proposed legislation. One of the areas that they want the law to be changed in is to allow a self-plus-one option. The reason behind these reforms, the FEHB program wants to foster more competition from other health insurance carriers and also to reduce program costs. Now, you know, it'll save the program money maybe, but will it save the individual money? And that's the important question here. NARF would like to see more data to make sure that this self-plus-one option is not going to result in an adverse risk selection, causing some enrollees' premiums to increase while others decrease. So we have asked the Office of Personnel Management to provide us some kind of data that would assure us that this isn't going to affect the big pool federal employees and retirees and survivors and dependents, 8 million of them make up now under the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program.
Well, and the FEHBP is certainly one of the best health plans, if not the best program in the country, and it's especially good for retirees because they pay the same premiums in the same plans as young, healthy workers.
Right.
So I can see why you're concerned that adding another group to this risk pool could adversely affect older workers.
Yeah.
Older workers and retirees.
Right. If it splinters the risk pool up, I mean, if it creates a different risk pool, if the population of that self plus one is by far older retirees whose dependents are no longer eligible mm-hmm. for coverage. We all know that older retirees cost the program more. And if the majority of people that move into that self-plus-one are going to be the older retirees, we're going to see an effect on the premiums. So, a lot of folks think, well, it's obviously got to be lower than the family, but I'm not too sure that we'll have to see.
That's really interesting that you'd say that. I must say I'd never thought about it because in the past when people have made arguments for self-plus-one, they seem to me to have been younger workers
mm-hmm.
who but maybe had a partner or a spouse, but they didn't have kids, didn't plan to have kids, or for whatever reason. But they wanted the benefits of a group plan, but they wanted it tailored to their particular situation. But I can see where it would boomerang.
Yes, it could. Right now, the self-only option for most plans, is about half of what the family option is in terms of premiums.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly enough, I was looking at the California state benefit program.
CalPERS.
CalPERS is what it's called. And I noticed that the premiums for self-only were about half of what they were for the self-plus-one. Now, the self-plus-one premiums were several hundred dollars, you know, lower than the family. But right now, we have that kind of ratio between self and self and family. I'm just wondering, you know, how this is going to play out. OPM says it's going to save money. I'm just wondering whose money it's going to save.
Well,
is it
good.
Going to save enrollees, or is it going to save the program?
Good for a lot of people at NARF is on the advisory committee. Thank you, David Snell, for being with us. We'll get back to you in a couple of weeks and bring things up to date. Meantime, we take a short break here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Go on, sweetie. Jump to Dad.
I'm not sure, Daddy. The water's cool.
There are moments in life that cause us to hesitate.
Jump right here.
Okay. Here I come.
I got you. Good job.
I did it. That was fun.
But once we take action, we're really glad that we did. If you're thinking about selling your home, don't hesitate. Interest rates are low and buyers are in the market. Every market's different. Call a Realtor today and visit Realtor.com. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, led by Technical and Management Resources, Inc., is a GSA Alliance small business contract holder. Here's President and CEO Linda Carr.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions team consists of 7 IT firms. Collectively, our core competencies cover all of the functional areas of the Alliance contract and supports agencies' enterprise IT requirements. For potential small business teaming opportunities, please contact us at advancedalliant.com.
To learn more, visit advancedalliant.com.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Hi, this is Hillary Howard. Join me October 12th and 13th for the Law Enforcement Ride and Run to Remember. This year we have 55 or 30-mile bike rides held at National Harbor Saturday, October 12th, and a 5K in Washington at the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Sunday, October 13th. The Law Enforcement Ride and Run to Remember raises funds and awareness while commemorating the service and sacrifice of law enforcement officers. Go to rideandruntoremember.org to register today.
Achieve continuous monitoring through the Security Connected Framework from McAfee. Built on more than 2 decades of proven security practices, the Security Connected approach helps agencies improve security posture, optimize security for greater cost effectiveness, and align security strategically with mission objectives. Visit futureagency.com to learn more. That's futureagency.com. For each unique visitor to futureagency.com, $1 will be donated to the Wounded Warrior Project.
At BAE Systems, we work relentlessly to stay ahead of the bad guys. One significant challenge every organization faces is cyber threats. That's why our experts leverage the world's most advanced cyber operations technologies, enabling us to preempt network breaches in minutes, not days. Knowing our work makes a difference inspires us every day. We're there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at baesystems.com/nextfront.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Mosquitoes thrive in wet environments, which might seem strange in one respect. How do their fragile bodies survive the impact of raindrops 50 times their weight? Mosquitoes have long wings and legs, so they just get momentarily spun in the air when a raindrop applies a glancing blow, says David Hu, a Georgia Tech engineer. He used high-speed videos to show even in a direct hit because the insect's so light.
The mosquito and the drop, they sort of join together, and they fall together for about 5 to 20 body lengths before separating.
That's only a problem very close to the ground. So Hu says engineers making tiny robotic flyers could mimic a mosquito's lightweight design to reduce the force of any impacts. And
we think if designers build in these long appendages, it'll basically allow them to always separate from the colliding object without even trying.
To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm going to be talking with Sean Riley. He's a senior writer with the Federal Times, a veteran of this program. Sean, are you with us?
I'm here. How are you, Mike?
I'm good. And, I'm reminded of a joke, which I don't dare tell on the radio, but the punchline is the guy says, I'm dancing as fast as I can. And I'm looking at the lineup here we have for you about what we're going to talk about. Possibility of a government shutdown, the uncertainty of the funding for the fiscal 2014 budget, the fact that some groups, judges and FAA managers, have asked Congress to relieve them from the sequestration or any CR that would cut down on things, and also the GAO report on the Postal Service plan to open up its own health insurance plan. So start dancing, Sean.
I'm so glad August is a slow month.
Absolutely. Who said that?
But I think we're all in a kind of wait-and-see mode. Of course, the big thing on the horizon is the end of fiscal 2013 at the end of September. It's less than a month, a little more than a month away. And as usual, Congress is nowhere near finishing up work on the FY14 appropriations bills. I think the House has passed 4 out of the 12. The Senate has passed none. And so we're looking at another continuing resolution, at least at the beginning of fiscal 14 in October. But there's another wrinkle this year, which is at what level that CR will be set. This will be the second year that agencies will be operating under the Budget Control Act. This was the law passed back in 2011 to bring down federal spending or reduce federal deficits. And the House and Senate are working off very different top-line numbers for discretionary spending. The House is assuming that there will be another round of sequestration FY14, so its number is much lower. The Senate is assuming that somehow something will be worked out. And the question for agencies and federal employees, at what level that CR will be established. And, I think based on history up to now, some pessimism is warranted in terms of what the number will be, that maybe, in a range, it'll probably be lower rather than the higher. And what's interesting is you're already seeing employee groups or agencies essentially asking Congress to cut them a break. Last week, 87 federal judges wrote to congressional leaders asking them that if there is a CR that continues this year's sequester levels, that they be given extra money. They're already, courts are having to furlough employees. They announced this week that they're cutting the fee for private attorneys who represent indigent defendants in federal criminal cases by $15 an hour. There are a number of other impacts that they are concerned about that will continue if the sequester continues. And you also had the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration Managers Association. This is a private organization representing about almost 1,500 FAA managers. Asked Congress, put in a pitch to allow the FAA to tap into an airport improvement grant fund, which is what they did back in April, to end furloughs for air traffic controllers, to resort to that source of funding again in the case if there is a sequester level CR. And the FAA Managers Association says they're also looking at other areas of FAA's budget that might be used to free up money for personnel, again, to avoid furloughs for air traffic controllers. And I'm sure there's a lot more of this going on behind the scenes. As we saw in this year, Congress was able to include what they call anomalies, essentially, or special provisions that allow agencies some flexibility or additional flexibility to deal with the CR. You had DOD, the Defense Department, was able to end furloughs earlier than expected at only 6 days instead of 11 days, in part because Congress agreed to reprogram some money into its operation maintenance accounts, which covers most civilian personnel. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes right now, I suspect, and we'll begin to see the results of that when Congress comes back second week in September.
And, you know, the other thing to remember is that sequestration has only been in effect for 6 months. You know, we haven't had a year of it yet.
Well, exactly. And I think what you have to keep in mind is that under the law, which, of course, Congress can change, I mean, this is going to be the, this is just the first year in almost a decade running through 2021 under the Budget Control Act, which sequesters will be required. They'll work a little bit differently than they did this year. But if Congress cannot come up with an agreement to essentially turn it off or modify it, this is the future for some time to come.
Okay. The Postal Service has for some time now been talking about going it alone and setting up its own health plan. The postal unions, by and large, are adamantly opposed to it. They say it would wreck the program for employees and retirees. What's the status of that?
Well, the status is the Postal Service still wants to do it, and it appears to have gained, as we've talked about before, it seems to have gained no traction or very little traction in Congress or even within the Obama administration. The Postal Service broached this idea about 2 years ago. It is at the, I think I would say with ending Saturday mail delivery, this is probably one of its top priorities, essentially to pull its employees and retirees out of the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, create a standalone program. Although that's what they originally proposed, they have the Postmaster General a couple of months ago said they would be willing to consider a standalone plan, essentially a Postal Service exclusive plan, as I understood it, within the FHBP. But the original idea was to take them out of the FHBP altogether. And there was a very interesting Government Accountability Office report that came out this week that probably takes the most careful look at what the Postal Service is proposing to do and what the potential impact would be. Both for the FEHBP and for postal employees and retirees, because you're talking about here, if the Postal Service did take its folks out of the FEHBP, that would be about 1 million people, or one quarter of the program's enrollment. Now, the GAO found essentially this would not make a huge difference to the FEP itself, but it could have an effect on at least some of some active postal workers and retirees, and there'd be a couple of the impact would be felt in a couple of ways. One is for retirees who are 65 or older, Medicare would become essentially their primary insurer, so to speak, and then the Postal Service plan would be the backup, covering whatever Medicare does not cover. Overall, GAO found that under what the Postal Service is proposing, close to two-thirds of enrollees would see, would pay about the same in premiums or less. But it also found that depending on which of the options you took within the Postal Service plan, and as I understand it, they're proposing there would be sort of three different options within their plan, there could be significantly higher out-of-pocket costs, both for deductibles and out-of-pocket maximums. I'm looking at the report right now. Under one option proposed by the Postal Service, total out-of-pocket maximum amounts for family coverage for in-network and out-of-network services would be at least $8,000 more under the proposed high option, at least $14,000 more under the proposed middle option than under any selected FEHB plan. The proposed U.S. Postal Service plan also includes a separate $1,500 out-of-pocket maximum for prescription drugs, and that would provide more cost protection for prescription drug spending than most of the selected plans, but less than the FEHB plan with the greatest number of postal enrollees. So bottom line, it's very complicated, and it's difficult to say exactly what the impact would be on any particular postal employee or retiree. A lot would depend on, essentially how much health care you use, whether you have family coverage, whether you rely a lot on out-of-network providers. Again, so far there doesn't seem to be a lot of enthusiasm for the Postal Service taking this step. Earlier this month, Senators Tom Carper and Tom Coburn, who are the two top, essentially the chairman and top Republican on the Senate committee that oversees the Postal Service, introduced legislation that would authorize the Postal Service to begin discussing this with its unions, but would essentially require some sort of agreement between the Postal Service and labor before they could go forward with any change like
Sean,
that.
Sean, if you could hold that thought, I've got some questions for you, but Lauren Larson, our producer, is giving me the evil eye, and that means trouble. So you need to take a short break here, 1500 AM, federalnewsradio.com. Be right back.
Here's Rick Walsh, Mobility Lead U.S. Army and the Federal Executive Forum on Mobility, sponsored by Dell Software.
Today, we look at mobility as an enabler. In a short period of time, mobility itself is going to become the driver. I think that's what we're going to see is mobility is going to let me do these things. Mobility is going to be what I do. It's going to be the driver in my future IT expenditures, my future IT looking, and that is a connected user base.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Give your users the power to work efficiently and securely, no matter where they are or which devices or platforms they're using with Dell Software Mobility Solutions. Whether you need desktop virtualization, mobile IT administration, identity and access management, or application modernization, you'll find the right Dell software is available through DLT Solutions. Discover how Dell Software Mobility Solutions can help your agency meet its mission and objectives. Visit dlt.com/dellsoftware.
The Guiding You Home Safely Report, provided and paid for by the National Air Traffic Controllers Association.
Appropriations bills to fund the Transportation and Housing and Urban Development Departments have passed both the House and Senate committees, both chambers agreeing on $140 million to keep open air traffic control towers. But the overall funding levels are very different. The $44 billion House version is $10 billion less than the Senate version. If the conference committee is unable to iron out a compromise, FAA could be looking at closing control towers, which would mean major delays again at airports in the fall.
Hi, I'm Trish Gilbert, Executive Vice President of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. I've been an air traffic controller for more than 21 years. I chose this career because it gave me the chance to do something very important. Air traffic controllers like me take great pride in working hard to ensure the safety of 70,000 flights a day in U.S. airspace. We strive to reach the highest level of professionalism. So on your next flight, sit back and relax. We'll guide you home safely. Visit NATCA.org.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Smarter mobile government starts with real innovation. The Lenovo ThinkPad Helix Convertible Ultrabook, inspired by Intel, combines lightweight tablet mobility and Ultrabook performance powered by the Intel Core i7 processor. Durable rip-and-flip design switches from Ultrabook to tablet with the push of a button. Two powerful devices in one, protected by legendary Think reliability and robust government-grade security. Go further. Do more with Lenovo. More at WTOP.com/Ultrabook.
True innovation means anticipating challenges before they occur. Lockheed Martin was early to recognize the changing nature of naval warfare. New types of threats in coastal waters called for a new kind of combat ship. We responded with deep thinking for shallow waters, designing the littoral combat ship with speed, agility, and the most networked sensors of any surface combatant. And to make sure commanders stay one step ahead of evolving missions, the LCS is built on a flexible C-frame with interchangeable mission modules. It offers the operational flexibility to execute focused missions such as anti-submarine, mine, and surface warfare, providing access and dominance in the coastal battle space like never before. The LCS is one more example of our ongoing commitment to those who are meeting the security challenges of today and tomorrow. Lockheed Martin. We never forget who we're working for.
Government IT professionals, register today for the Executive Leadership Conference. This government-led education and training event hosted by the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council features newly designed interactive workshops. Nationally prominent speakers from within government will share their freshest ideas and techniques for leveraging new technologies and data for mission success. October 27th through 29th in Williamsburg, Virginia. Register today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org.
Acquisition and Industry Thursday on Federal News Radio. Thursday mornings at 11, listen for AmTower Off-Center, a unique perspective on B2G marketing. Thursday afternoons at 2, CGP's Roger Waldron hosts Off the Shelf, a show on all things procurement. And Thursdays at 3, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you industry chatter about policy, regulation, and trends. Acquisition and Industry Thursday on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Hey, I'm Mike Causey. This is Your Turn. We're back and talking with Sean Riley from the Federal Times. And before the break, Sean, you were talking about the Government Accountability Office in-depth study of the Postal Service plan for a go-it-alone health program. And one thing that caught my ear, and from talking with Walton Francis, the author of Washington Consumer Checkbook, and I guess he's the world's leading authority on federal health plans and maybe health plans in general, but he said the primary reason anybody buys insurance, health insurance, or the reason that they should be buying it is catastrophic coverage, and that is how much you'd have to pay out of pocket before your insurance plan takes over the rest. And those are some pretty high ceilings proposed in this postal plan, aren't they?
Well, yeah, they are. And again, not everyone would obviously face those ceilings, but certainly those are the, you know, if you ask people what their what their biggest concerns are financially, getting hit with a huge hospital bill is certainly one of them, and that is what you, I think Walt's absolutely right, that you want insurance for those times when you need a lot of medical care and there's no way you could cover it yourself. So that, I think those numbers are going to get a lot of attention if this debate, if there is a serious debate in Congress about letting the Postal Service go ahead with this. And it certainly, as you noted, the postal unions are very opposed to pulling out of the FEHBP, and these numbers get a lot of attention.
Right, and three of them actually sponsor plans too that are very popular with non-postal workers as well as postal employees.
Exactly.
You were talking earlier about the possibility of a government shutdown or the CR furlough days or whatnot, and these things like this always bring out emphasize some federal programs that are absolutely essential, and I think people take them for granted. And, you could say Social Security is one. Internal Revenue Service may not be popular, but it's certainly essential to things. Now, Congress so far has taken care of Social Security, or correct me if I'm wrong, but they've kind of let the IRS get thinner and thinner.
Well, they have, and it would get a lot thinner under the House-passed appropriations bill, spending bill that funds the IRS for FY14. I think it would be about a 25% cut. And, apart from its, the other issues, the IRS has gotten a lot of attention because over these allegations that essentially was targeting Tea Party groups for special scrutiny in applications for tax-exempt status. But the IRS also plays a crucial role in implementation of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, which essentially goes into effect, or large parts of it go into effect next year. This, the IRS would be responsible essentially for some of the enforcement of this. And so that's drawn additional attention from Congress, but, on the Republican side, as you might imagine, which wants to keep the IRS from playing that role. But also, I think there's just there's a general dislike of the IRS's role as a tax collector, even though, of course, this is what, they're the ones who bring in the money and thus are essential to, essential cog in assuring that there will be enough funding for government to continue to operate, including programs like Social Security, defense, veterans health, et cetera. And it has been getting thinner. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but there's certainly their staffing has been reduced. They've been a sort of a slow decline. and you have to presume that is having some impact on their ability to collect revenue.
Well, and this is an outfit, too, where people, you can tell down to the dollar how much salary they make versus what they bring in on a daily basis. And it's staggering, these auditors and revenue officers, what they're bringing in every day.
Oh, yeah. I think the return on investment is significant. I mean, it's much, each one brings in a lot more, at least according to IRS numbers, than they take in salary and benefits. So you have to question whether this is, how much sense this makes in terms of, assuring, reducing the deficit and assuring, again, that there's enough money for a government to function properly.
Well, again, talking about a government shutdown or even budget cuts, but you've got 535 members of Congress, all of whom are members of the Frequent Flyer Club.
Mm-hmm.
They probably fly as much as almost any group of people, any group of workers or retirees in the country. And when it comes to FAA, they get very nervous, don't they?
They do. Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, they spend an enormous amount of time on airplanes, particularly those who, say, live out west, but nonetheless still fly home frequently to their states or districts. And it was certainly noted back in April when they miraculously managed to find some money in very short order to avert the impact of sequestration on air traffic controllers, how quickly they were able to do this. So it is a sensitive issue. And also, in fairness to members of Congress, I think they were also aware of the fact that millions of other travelers were being inconvenienced as well by delays caused by these air traffic controller furloughs. But certainly they got they definitely paid attention, and so did the White House. Another area is, oddly enough, meatpacking. I don't think many people knew this before sequestration took effect, but you have to have a federal meat inspector on hand at these beef and poultry processing plants, and if they're not, the plant can't operate. And so this was another instance where Congress quickly approved some additional funding or additional latitude in how the Agriculture Department allocates funding to make sure that these federal food safety inspectors could do their jobs.
Yeah, that got people's attention, or the possibility that tainted meat would come in. Now, what I think about during a government shutdown, something like the FAA, suppose, God forbid, there is an accident, a mid-air collision or just a crash. The U.S. airline industry record for safety is phenomenal,
mm-hmm.
and particularly compared with the rest of the world. But what if there was an accident while there was a government shutdown? Who would these politicians throw under the bus?
Well, I think it might be they might have to go together.
Mm-hmm.
There would be the finger pointing would be rampant, but I think it also would be a very sobering reminder. Of course, it would depend on the circumstances of what led to this. This mishap, and let's hope it never happens. But it could potentially be a reminder that these decisions, all this fussing and fighting in Washington is not just an abstract, phenomenon. It can have real world consequences.
Well, I remember years ago when there was a sort of a government shutdown, but they were going to do something to the government wide, and then the Postal Service came in and said, "Well, you don't mean us, do you?" And they said, "Oh no, not you." And then the defense came in and said, "Well, the Russian submarines off the coast of Norfolk," and they said, "Well, we don't mean you." FAA, Treasury, and eventually it got down to where I think the American Battle Monuments Commission was the only one under these constraints. But that's not happening this time, is it?
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's going to be very interesting to watch this play out, because I think a lot of the, like any large organization, the federal government has some slack, and I think that has helped cushion the impact of sequestration this year. But I think it could be a different story next year if you're looking at, the same levels of funding that agencies are currently operating under. It could be much more difficult. I mean, we've had the Defense Department already talk about the possibility of reductions in force, i.e. layoffs, rather than resorting to furloughs. And I suspect you may see other agencies doing the same, that they just don't have as much room to operate in as they did this year. And I should add, in regard to the possibility of a shutdown, the expectation, and this is only an expectation, is that, Congress will go ahead and pass a continuing resolution to get us through at least the first month or two of FY14, but it'll really be preparing for the big showdown, which is when the government hits its debt ceiling, and there'll be another fight over.
As you said, so much for a dull August. Sean, thank you so much for being with us. Lauren Larson, thanks for pushing the board. And look at our webpage and see what Mike O'Connell's take is on the highlights to the show. We'll see you next Wednesday at 10 a.m.
Thanks, Mike.